Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, have I got a treat for you today. I've got a fabulous guest. It's Emma Manners, the Duchess of Rutland, and she lives in the most beautiful Beaver Castle up in the Midlands. And she's quite an extraordinary lady. I can't wait to talk to her. I've got so many questions, and I hope you enjoy it. Well, hello, Emma. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm very, very honoured to be on your podcast.
This is
one of the highlights of my podcast career will be that I'm chatting to you.
Oh, that's very nice. Being a podcaster yourself, I'm very flattered too. But I'm thrilled to have you on. I'm thrilled you wanted to come on. And I've got so many questions to ask you because your story is extraordinary. I mean, it's amazing. I knew little bits, but having done all my research, your life is extraordinary. So I hope you'll share some of it with us.
Yeah, well, definitely. Absolutely. You never think your own life is really extraordinary, do you? And when I was approached to write my book, I thought, well, what is there really to say? And it's only when I expect you've done this as well, Twiggy, but it's only when you start unraveling it and you think, well, maybe it is of interest, but it doesn't feel like it when you're in the shoes.
It doesn't. I mean, people, it's interesting you say that because people often, you know, all the interviews you do over the years. I know what happened to me in the beginning. I understand that was quite extraordinary, but the rest is just your life, isn't it? That you carry on doing things and some things work out, some things don't work out. There's the highs, the lows, the happiness, the sadness. It's just another life. So I agree with you. I don't think of most of my life as extraordinary. It's just my life. And yours is the same, although a very different life. Because you grew up in Wales, right? On a farm.
Yes, I did. And the farm's still there today.
What kind of farm?
So, well, in the day, back in my day, I was born in 1963, it was mixed arable, and we had a few chickens at the back, and we did crops, and we did, my favourite bit was we had a herd of Hereford cattle, I love cattle, and I spent every evening I can remember as a child, either riding my pony Betty around the Welsh hills, or in a beaten up old Land Rover with my dad going to check on the stock. And then we ran a bed and breakfast business in the farmhouse. Uh-huh. And my mum was quite very good cook. And so she would be back to stage and I would, Twiggy, be sent at sort of 6 or 7 to go and open the door. And she'd say, well, just check them out and make sure they look okay. And if they do, we've got a spare room.
There's no room in the inn tonight.
There's no room in the inn. And also
hysterical.
You have to learn to scan people quite quickly. And then I can still see, the little, we had it typed out, the breakfast menu, because I'm very dyslexic. And so mum would always say, for goodness sake, get this right, otherwise they'll get the wrong breakfast. So I'd have to go round the house at sort of 7 o'clock, knocking on their door in the morning and taking their breakfast order. And because, you know, we were very conscious of money and not wasting money. And although we got our chicken and our eggs, bacon was more expensive. So she'd say, do it like this, Em. You want to say, cereals, grapefruit, or I think it was grapefruit segments, you know, out of a tin, or orange juice to start. And then you can have eggs, boiled, scrambled, you know, all the eggs. And then very quietly at the end say, or a full-cooked breakfast. So that was my full-cooked breakfast. Yeah, they all went ripple. She came down and said, "We got that wrong, didn't you?"
That's so funny. It must have been, I always think that, I mean, I grew up in the suburb of London, but I always think as a child growing up on a farm must be idyllic, isn't it?
Oh, it was like so many bits of my life when I've had moments that haven't been quite as happy. And I always reflect back to that little pony Betty and that freedom of living on that hill. And there were no boundaries, I suppose. There was never a boundary in my life. It was freedom.
How wonderful. And growing up with that, I mean, we always had pets, but, you know, it was a dog or a cat. But I always think when I see, you know, kids in farms, it just must be the best. Because most kids love animals.
Yeah, but you're very practical, Twiggy. You're very practical about life and death.
That's quite interesting.
Because if you saw a lamb really struggling and or a chicken, we had lots of chickens in broiler houses, and if they had, you know, they really had a problem, I think nothing of knocking it on the head to finish it off because it was in pain. So it makes you very pragmatic and practical.
It does, actually. And yeah, you're right, because growing up in London where I did, you know, meat and fish and things were things you got in the supermarket. You didn't actually think through where, as a kid I'm talking about, where it came from. And so the thought of then animals dying was like, oh my God, that's terrible, you know. But I've got other friends who've grown up are farmers, and it is a whole different mindset, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think that definitely gave me a great sense of practicality in my mind. If I look back, there'd been moments when I've used that philosophy. For example, I lost five children and had five with miscarriages. And I was always so practical about that because I thought, well, it's just not meant to be, you know.
Yeah, I had one, but five, my goodness.
Yeah.
Actually, it's much more common than we are led to believe. Apparently now people are talking about it, which is a wonderful thing that they are.
Yes.
But I mean, it was horrible and I didn't like it, but I was fine because it was one. And then I was lucky, I got pregnant immediately, and that's my daughter.
Oh, what age is she?
My daughter, she just turned 45. I can't believe it. It seems impossible to me that it's 45 years ago that she was born.
Wow.
But she's now got two kids of her own who are my darlings, of course. I want to talk about how you went from being a Welsh farmer to now being, you know, the Duchess of a castle. I mean, that is the best story in the world. How did you meet your husband?
So I met David, dropped out trained to be an opera singer. I went to the Guildhall.
Oh, yeah. When you left the farm, you trained as an opera singer.
I did, but it was very obvious I wasn't going to make it. I'd been at best, most probably. I had a very good, you know, the Welsh do Eisteddfods and that sort of thing.
So I spent my
whole time going around Wales, either saying a poem or singing a song. But actually, when I was put to the test, it wasn't for me. And so I dropped out. And then eventually, I ended up setting up my own interior design business when I was about 25.
Okay.
And through that, I go to London to Decorex, which is the interior design exhibition every year. And I met David at I didn't know where I was going. Was the someone I met at Decorex said, "Oh, come for dinner tonight." And so I didn't know where I was going, didn't know anyone there, but I've always had a sense of adventure, Twiggy. And so I went along, and I'm not joking, that the host was in the kitchen saying, "Oh, it's Emma. Oh, go and find the room and change into your party frock." And David, who was standing over by the fireplace, looking like a sort of period painting, show her the room and we'll see you at dinner. So David showed me this room, which was downstairs, and then helped me find me the ironing board and iron my dress. And I never forget, he kept saying, "You missed a bit there. You've missed a bit there." I thought, "Well, you're just going to annoy me in a minute." Anyway, that's how we met. And that was, so we were totally and utterly, and he gave me his card to eat at the end of the night. And bearing in mind, I had no idea what aristocracy was. We didn't come across it in Wales.
No, exactly.
An honourable, most probably. I hadn't met a lord and certainly not a duke. And he gave me his card. And on this card he gave me, it said, "Registered firearms dealer, the Marquess of Granby, David Manners." Well, I took it home to my brother the next day on the farm. I said, "Well, who do you think this is? This really nice guy." And he gave me, and he looked at this card and he said, "M, he sounds like he could be a dodgy one, or he most probably owns a pub. So I think I'd most probably give him a miss." Well, of course, there are 1,200 pubs in the UK called the Marquess of Granby, and that's why we thought he owned a pub. But we didn't get our head around.
Oh, that's hysterical! You thought he owned a pub.
Oh dear, that's it's brilliant. Funny, I know.
It that's was a brilliant story, absolutely brilliant.
Anyway, so we became completely, I come up here for a weekend, he'd come down to Wales. We just became, as you do when you fall in love.
What was your impression when you first went to Beaver Castle?
Oh, God.
A castle! I mean, it's every little girl's dream to live in a castle.
I know. And this one is a bit like the Walt Disney castle. It's on the top of a hill and it sort of grows out of the trees, just like in Walt Disney.
I know, I looked at loads of pictures. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, the butler came to the door and I was an hour early and he was a bit like Lurch. From anyway, he looked down at me, he must have been 6'8" or 9", and he said, looked at me, and I'd got a sort of suitcase, and most probably, and I'd arrived in my sort of rusty old banger, and he looked at me and said, "You called," as if it was out of a movie. And he said, and I said, "Oh yes, I've come for David's shooting weekend." He looked at his watch, he said, "You're an hour early." And
so did you have to go and sit in the car?
Literally. And he took me upstairs. This is even more scary. He took me upstairs to the sort of family drawing room and left me. And halfway through sitting, I was sort of looking around in this drawing room. I suddenly saw there was a body on one of the sofas. So I was absolutely terrified. I thought, is it dead? Is it alive? Anyway, it was my mother-in-law having an afternoon nap. And I was freaked out then. So,
that is so brilliant.
It was a baptism of fire, most probably.
God, that is so brilliant. That is so hysterical. You didn't move into the castle immediately, though, right? Because your father-in-law was still in the castle.
Yes. And, of course, I didn't understand how all that worked. So I didn't get the whole primogeniture and how, the moment someone passes, but it's a bit like the royal family in a way. The moment someone passes away, there's another duke in place,
That's
it's
right.
The king dies, long live the king, or
That's
the queen
right.
dies, long live the king. So I didn't understand any of that. So I should have most probably bought Debrett's or something like that to give me. But I learned the hard way because I just always get it wrong. And when you get things wrong and you blunder into them, there's always someone who's far grander that will hopefully guide you and say, no, you don't do it like that.
That is so brilliant. But, you know, as you said, when you meet someone, you fall in love. You don't think of all those things, do you? It's like...
No. We lived on a house on the estate, and I set up a garden and conservatory furniture business and ran it with a friend of mine who I knew from up here in Leicestershire, and then started to have our family. And those were wonderful years. So Violet and Alice and Eliza were all born at Nipton Lodge. And then it was January 1999 when my father-in-law passed away. And it felt, and I was pregnant with Charles, who's our oldest son. And I remember just the panic, Twiggy, of, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? How are we going to... It was just like this... terrible panic.
What was the castle in good order? Was it in was it run down? Because I've known a few people over the years who've lived in castles or stately homes, and the running and the upkeep must be an ongoing nightmare.
Yeah.
So was it in a good state when you took it over?
So it's like anything that you've lived in for a long time, and my in-laws have been here for over 40 years.
So it's tired.
It was probably, it was tired, you know. And because it's, once you've decorated one room in a place like this, you said there's so many more to move on to that you don't want to come back to the one that you started. So I'm already getting that after 25 years now.
How many rooms?
Over 200.
That is, I can't even imagine what it's like. That's and also the upkeep of the outside, the walls.
So the roof. So we're just 2.5 acres of roof. Can't believe it, can you?
It's unbelievable.
And just after we moved in, the children came into our bedroom and said, oh, Mummy, Daddy, quickly, the castle's flooding. So I got up and grabbed a brolly and a barb and some wellies and went onto the roof. When the roof is, it's got steps all over the roof, so you can access the whole roof. And found the problem. So I scurried down. So this is about 4 o'clock in the morning in August 2001. Scurried down the central internal roof on my posterior. And I could see the problem straight away, the gutter just full of water. And I thought, going on here? So I stuck my hand right into the drain and literally pulled out 4 dead pigeons, and it just went just like that.
That's
so straight away, you had to, it made me think, I've got to learn how this place works now. I've got to get my head around this now, because... Yeah, and also I realised that the most important thing we fixed first was the roof.
Absolutely.
Because if you haven't got a good roof.
If you haven't got a good roof, forget it. Unbelievable. So did you, at that point, did you have an inner panic of thinking this is what I've got to kind of help turn around?
Yes. And I did not, and I've never been a real, luckily, because it's quite a lonely job being a duchess, because there aren't that many others that are neighbours. And
I say, and you're in the middle of how many acres?
About 18,000 acres. There's loads of people.
I say, you must have loads of people on the land and in the house. And
we've got a property portfolio that was very run down, that we spent a lot of money on that, mm-hmm. doing all the renting properties out. It was scary, Twiggy. I think looking back, I had most probably throughout that entire time very mild. And I didn't know what anxiety was then, but I had hovering anxiety all the time, looking back.
Because there was so much to do and so much to deal with. Lots of staff to look after. And
the staff all hated us because
Why?
They were desperate for the... because people get very set in their ways with people. If you've been working for someone, they didn't want children running around.
Okay.
They didn't. And I was wanting to change things. If no one wants change. I hate change, don't they?
Yeah, that's true, actually. And I suppose in a way they felt it was their domain that you were moving into.
Yes.
Although
you're
it wasn't. But do you know what I mean?
Well, of course.
Because they've lived there and worked for your in-laws for so many years. They must have felt it was theirs. And what's this little upstart telling telling me what to do?
Yeah, this little Welsh upstart. I dreaded going on to, they used to call me the dairymaid duchess.
That's brilliant.
So I used to go through to the public rooms and the guides, they really scared us all. And the children would come running back and say, "Mummy, they've been horrid," and they may have, may not, perhaps they were just winding me up. So I equipped all the kids with water pistols. I said, "Well, next time they're rude, just shoot them." Which most probably wasn't very clever, but I felt rude. On every level I had to get ownership of this place,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I had to get on top of it. And I'm really bad with anyone negative. And to anyone negative, I just had to get rid of them.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Negativity never gets anyone anywhere, does it? It's interesting. We were listening to, when we drive down to the country, we listened to talking books in the car, and we had one on. It was Peter Ustinov telling his story. And he said in it, there's one negative trait that I've never had and I never want it, is jealousy, because he said it just wears you away and doesn't gain anything. And it's the same thing, isn't it? Really good. And he said, I've probably felt jealous all my life, but I wouldn't let it grow into what it can become, because jealousy, you can't, there's no answer to jealousy. It just eats you away.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think all those emotions that are negative, jealousy, anger, bitterness, envy, they're all in one bracket, and I put them in a bubble over there. And for me, I've got to stay happy, light, engaging. And sometimes that's very difficult.
It's very difficult. It's very, especially when you start having kids and dealing with their emotions as well. And trying to bring that, you know, because we all make mistakes.
Oh, I've made so many mistakes bringing up my children. But luckily, they all tell you now what you've done wrong, don't they?
Yes,
so in my day, well, Mum, the big one for me is you gave us no boundaries, Mum. No boundaries.
Most kids would love that, right? That's hysterical. I think
I'm boundaryless.
I was pretty strict. We were strict with bedtimes. That was all, because I just felt, well, we needed our time. And also, if they don't go to bed, I had one of my best friends had kids and she'd let them stay up until they dropped. And they were always tired at school the next day or were late. Do you know what I mean? Because they hadn't had their full night's sleep. Because a little kid will always fight it. But, you know, they're tired. So I think I was strict about that. But otherwise, probably a pushover.
Oh yeah, because and with five, you know, you had to get it so you rotated bedtime, so the youngest went to bed first, and then otherwise, you know, and the oldest always had 10 minutes more than. So there was, I mean, night times. If I hadn't have had that thimble full of white wine to sit between bedtimes and stories, I think I would have gone completely mad.
That is the, between their tea or dinner, whatever they call it, and their bedtime, and that's what my daughter says. It's like the 2 hours of insanity, because they're tired, they're up, you know, they, and yet they fight it, and it's like, so I only had to deal with one, so I can't imagine. Do any of them still live at home?
Yeah, well, they do. They come and they go, and so everyone's got their rooms here, and we've got, so this weekend, I always cook Sunday lunch every Sunday. I love getting everyone around the table and hopefully not fighting. Do you know what I mean?
It is the best.
And we've gone through that stage. I think we had pretty difficult COVID, but we've come through that, and everyone has, to be fair to them all, we have all started to respect each other's boundaries. So I have had to learn that word boundaries through my children. But I always say that I think you learn so many lessons from your children. You learn as many from them as you ever teach them.
So I don't want to get too personal, but you're still married to David, but you're separated, correct?
Yeah.
And you live in different apartments in the castle. Obviously it works for you guys. So you're friends still, presumably.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yes, we're the best friends. We really are. I think it's weird, isn't it? How why wouldn't you be? Because obviously, again, if your ego gets too in the way when the marriage breaks down, then it's difficult to accept. But if you try and remain, you know, it was as much my fault as it was David's, and we both have a responsibility for the marriage not working. And that's really sad.
Well, also, I think, you know, people sometimes grow out of each other, but you can still be good friends.
Well, yeah, I mean, our children see us together now being much nicer with each other, most probably, and far less frustrated. And everyone's looking out for everyone else. So if Dad's having a tough time, you know, everyone's looking out for him. And, you know, we're a unit.
You're a unit, and you always will be.
We make it work.
So I want to ask you, because have you opened it yet, the 12 Days of Christmas?
So we have. Oh, thank you.
Because I was reading about that. It sounds so gorgeous. Tell us and the listeners what it is.
So every year we do a big Christmas theme. And last year we did Cinderella. And this year we've done 12 Days of Christmas. And so it ends with the partridge in the pear tree and the Regent's Gallery. But you go through each room, and each room tells the story of one of the 12 days. And yesterday we had lots of snow here, Twiggy. And
did I?
Yeah.
Wow.
It really
of course,
did feel very Christmassy.
You're quite north, aren't you? What's your nearest town or city?
Grantham.
Oh, okay. Oh, you are quite north then.
Look, Twiggy, look into my eyes. That is not north.
Oh.
It is what, north.
Is it Midlands?
Yeah. We call it Middle England. But I know for you, down in Sussex, it is really, really north. And my geography is terrible, so I'm not sure whether Sussex is next to Suffolk or... There was lots of snow. So, yeah, Christmas is big here. And glühwein and hot chocolates and...
Oh, yeah. It must be magical.
Oh, God. By the time we get to Christmas Day... You'll have to come and see it, but it's a long way. But I'd love you to
I'd
come
love
and see
to
it.
Come and visit. It looks so beautiful.
Do you ever go to London?
Oh, yeah, we mainly live in London.
Okay, well, you let me know if you get on the train. Get on the train at King's Cross to Grantham and text me and I'll pick you up and you can have a look round. I'd love to show you.
Well, can we wait till the better weather, please?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But to go on, so these 12 rooms of Christmas, are they just decorated to bring the things in, or have you got...
Yeah, decorated, and then we have music, singing, dancing, bagpipers. It's
amazing. My God, how do you organise all that? That's amazing.
Or it's like living in a stage, living in a 21st century stately home, 21st century. You're in a revolving bubble, Twiggy, and it's churning. Whether it's groups coming here to stay for shooting parties or Christmas or, I don't know, it's living on a hamster wheel, really. It really is.
Do you ever think, I'm just going to run away for a few weeks, and do you? I think you should.
I really do. I've just set up a foundation for Beaver and I'm going to Palm Beach tomorrow to launch it and doing a big ball.
Oh, is this the American Friends of Beaver?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading about that. It's a brilliant idea. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, Americans are so love this, what we've got in this country.
Yeah, they do.
In a way that I didn't really understand what I was marrying into, but now I do. And I think, It's amazing these houses are still in private hands. Are we going it to do is. Everything we can? Because otherwise, what do you do with them? The National Trust don't want
well,
them
I'm
anymore.
Sure you must know, and I'm sure you interviewed her on your podcast, but we know Charles, Spencer and Karen. And we've been there a few weekends, which is wonderful. And it's the same sort of thing, talking, you know, keeping it interesting to the people who come and visit and keeping the up.
Oh, well, she's amazing,
Amazing girl.
Unbelievable.
Canadian. Yeah, extraordinary. Coming into that must have been unbelievable, but she does it so brilliantly. And just the thought of it would scare me. But I know you're into meditation, aren't you?
So, yeah, so I had a mental breakdown about 8 years ago. And so I had to really look at how to get myself right. And I do lots of things. I do Reiki healing, self-healing on myself. I do daily meditation. I have to daily do some form of a run 2.5 miles, 6 o'clock every morning. So I have to work hard to stay grounded and stable now, and that was something very new for me because I'd never had a problem before.
Where do you think that came from? Do you think it was just an accumulative and because of the pressures of running a place like that?
I think there's so many things that happen, yeah, when the marriage breaks down, and so there's guilt and stress and juggling, and I think it was a combination of everything. And it just became too much. And then I just couldn't mentally or physically move. I just curled up into a ball. Aww. And retired into a bedroom up in the top of the castle somewhere and just couldn't get out. So when you've been and gone to somewhere like that, you kind of have to have a toolbox of stuff.
Of course, absolutely.
So that's what happened to me.
So you find through the meditation and the yoga and the Reiki. I've had that once. They kind of
it's like all energy. So yeah. It's all about working on energy and drawing down power from a sort of higher level.
But I do. I also think, as you said, exercise is so important, isn't it? And it must be lovely to have that space to be able to just escape.
Yeah.
I mean, I do Pilates, which I've got, about 8 years ago, I hurt my back and mainly through bad posture, I think, years and years of bad posture. And once it healed, because it was all muscular, my physio said, you've got to start Pilates. I wish I'd have started it in my 20s. It's absolutely amazing. Because I tried yoga once, but I couldn't do it. I think I left it too late. Oh, the Pilates is like amazing. Absolutely amazing. I only go once a week, but it's saved my life as well as my back. Because if you hurt or you've done something, that's all you think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
I used to get up every day and think, is my back going to be all right? Is it going to go out on me? You know, that's all you think about. So yeah. I knew I had to get it healed.
And you did it yourself?
Well, with the help of my wonderful teacher, really. And as I say, I think it goes back, you know, and I did a show in New York for 2 years, tap dancing. And she said probably all that pounding away as you get older, you know, it all comes back to haunt you. So I think it was a mixture of both, really. Yeah. Well, if you think when you tap, any dancer you meet, they've had hip replacement, especially ballet dancers, you know, hip replacements, knee replacements at a young age, because that constant wear and tear on their muscles and their bones is, you know, I mean, I only did it for 2 years, but obviously it
which was that show? Was that the boyfriend?
I did a show on Broadway called My One and Only, which was a Gershwin musical.
Oh, wow.
And it was great and I loved it, but and I was fine for years. I was in my 30s then. But then as you get older, I suppose, the old war wounds come out, don't they?
And can I ask you, just because it's so fascinating to me, any of your grandchildren got any of your talent?
They're only 8 and 3 at the moment. My granddaughter, who's 8, there's similarity in looks. I can see she looks more like me than my daughter. my daughter looks like her dad, who sadly died many years ago. But and that, you know, I mean, I've been married to Lee for 30, well, we've been together 38 years, but he's not her dad, he's her stepdad. But and Carly looks more like her real dad. But Joni, you know, I see it occasionally. She turns around and does a face, and I can kind of relate to that. It's funny how it, but I don't, she, I mean, Carly's a very talented artist and painter and things, and she's kind of picked that up. But she, you know, she's only 8, so who knows?
They're them, aren't they? They are going to be. But those genetic patterns, quite interesting in a family like this, because we've got 3 girls at the beginning of the 21st century, and there were 3 girls growing up here at Beef at the beginning of the 19th century. So that would be around the First and Second World War.
Oh, were there?
And,
wow.
And they were exactly 100 years apart. And the similarities of these girls are extraordinary.
Oh,
and
I'm really? Is this all in
girls,
your book?
You should write a book. I think they should write their own book about, you know, going to research their double,
yeah,
and find
exactly
out about. But you imagine that would have been sort of Downton Abbey kind of time. So,
but
really
is it in
these,
your book, Accidental Duchess, which is a great title? Is that story in there?
No,
about the girls.
Obviously, it's not my story. But I keep saying to them, you should really look at that, because I think there'd be so much social history that would be interesting.
No, it's fascinating. I mean, I did a Who Do You Think You Are, you know, the TV pro, and it was absolute. I mean, you know, I was hoping they'd find that I was related to someone with a castle, but I wasn't. And it was very kind of very working class and poor, really poor, really sad.
My
I think it was my great 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 grandmother. She ended up in the workhouse, actually, because...
Oh, my gosh.
Well, she was married. She had, like, I think something like 10 children.
Oh, my goodness.
3 of them died. The husband ran off. You know, it was like... And she ended up in the workhouse. It was quite a journey to go on. And they don't let you know anything, you know, until you're actually filming, because they want to get your reactions on camera. But it was... I love doing it. So I can't imagine what it must be like to have a heritage that your girls have got. It must be amazing. How far, when was the castle built?
So the first castle was built in 1066. It was a sort of Norman stronghold.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. That was the first thing.
Well, there would have been a wooden sort of very, very... Because it was a really fortified site because of the hill being so
the hill,
like
so they could see everywhere, yeah.
So there have been 4 castles and they've been knocked down through war and battle. And so this one we're in now was started in 1799 and finished in 1845. So it took nearly 50 years to build.
Wow. Does the title the Duke of Rutland go back that far or beyond?
Yes. So David's ancestor was this chap called Robert de Tordini, and he was the chap behind William the Conqueror, who with a spear to protect him from being killed. So he was his standard bearer. And
wow.
And that's,
I mean, to be able to trace your ancestors back that far must be absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love that. I mean, they couldn't go back further than, you know, my great, great, great grandmother. Because, you know, in the working class world, they didn't keep records, did they?
Exactly.
Many of them couldn't write. It was only the fact that she went into the workhouse that they... I mean, their researchers on that program are incredible. Because I tried to do it online, but it's so hard and so complicated. But their researchers are incredible. And I had one answer. I can't remember who it was now. Probably one of her daughters. She actually went to prison for a couple of years for passing coins because they were so poor. They never got the big guys, but they used to pass off coins that weren't real in shops. And she got arrested and went to jail for 2 years, I think. When she came out, she married a policeman.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's
and set
so
up
nice.
Home. I mean, it's hysterical.
Wonderful.
People's lives.
Yeah. But also fascinating because I think we carry so much of the memory of our bloodline. And so although we are, you know, she's your great-great-grandmother, we carry some of the genetic memory, whether it be in trauma or in happiness or in survival, we carry it within our DNA.
Yeah, I know, it's unbelievable.
I find it all very, very interesting. Well, I'm a Quaker from a Quaker family from Wales. So we can go right back to about 1600.
They've
always been farming. Always
farm. And are your family still running a farm?
Yes. So my brother I'm the oldest, my second brother down, William, he set up this mineral water business on the farm, and it's called Radnor Hills Mineral Water.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think he's huge. The whole valley is covered now in water business, and it's huge. And the fascinating thing I find, Twiggy, is the house is called Heartsease Farm. And it was supposedly where King Caractacus's heart was buried all these things I find very interesting. You can't really put.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. Is that in your book, all that story?
Yes.
I've got to get this book.
I'll send you my book. I'd love to.
Oh, will you? Yeah. Will you sign it?
Yeah.
I'd love one.
Promise to come up and see us because
I promise when the weather gets
I don't want to get
snowed in. Although if I got snowed in a castle, that would be quite magical actually.
You'd like that. We'll find a nice butler to look after you.
You also, let out the castle to film crews, don't you?
Yes.
Because wasn't it in The Crown? What was it meant to be? Was it meant to be Windsor?
Buckingham Palace.
Buckingham Palace. Okay. And is that exciting, or is it a nightmare when they all turn up with their lights?
Well, you know what it's like, Biff. I hide generally.
So when they were filming The Crown, how long were they there?
Oh, weeks. I hid the whole time. I put a dust cap on and a duster and pretend to be the cleaner. Because
that's brilliant.
I just wanted to watch, you know. I didn't want to be, and here's the Duchess.
Were you relieved when they all left or sad?
Well, you just surrender yourself. It's just hundreds and hundreds of people. And everyone who works here, they get really excited. So I keep having to go around saying, now, come on, it's work as normal.
Oh, yeah. Especially when they start seeing famous actors. It must be hysterical. That's so funny. So I wanted to ask you about ghosts. You must have a ghost in the castle.
We got lots. Lots and lots.
Have you actually seen one?
I've got a ghost or a presence with me all the time. She's here right now. And she's called Elizabeth. And she's the fifth Duchess. She's here now, everywhere. She really loves you, by the way.
Oh, so when did she live?
She built the castle, this one, to 1800.
Oh, wow. Oh my goodness. Have you actually seen one, or is it just a presence?
I've heard them in corridors. I haven't actually seen one, but I've heard she calls her children. She had 11 children.
Oh my goodness.
And seven survived. So babies crying, children. Yeah, but I've never thankfully seen them, but I've really had to be strict with the ghosts. Because I really did not tolerate them being in our, you know, there's lots of rooms here. And they were really, my children all saw them and they were freaking them out. So I got very angry.
They actually saw a physical presence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that would be scary.
And annoying.
I don't think I've ever experienced or seen a ghost. I don't know what I mean, what part of me would love to, but then the other part, I think I'd be frightened, especially in a big place like that. Does it frighten you, or are you so used
to
them now?
Absolutely not. So if any of you are hanging around in this room right now, don't get any ideas. I'm scared of you.
Have you watched the TV programme Ghosts?
No.
It would probably make you laugh, actually. it's about a couple who inherit this big house, and it's full of ghosts from different eras. But we can see them, obviously, and they get up to all sorts of naughtiness and tricks. It's a comedy, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's quite funny. Might make you laugh.
Yeah.
Are you still doing your podcast?
Well, Vi, my oldest daughter, was the instigator of the podcast. And she said, "Mum, I think it's run its course." And so I was mortified because I actually love, it's about the best thing I can do is chatting. So I was mortified when she said, "You know, you've done your bit now. Thanks, Mum." But anyway, well, maybe we'll get it back one day. Who knows? But she's doing other things with
it now. It's a brilliant idea. It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Well, it was lovely because, yeah.
No, go on. It was lovely, what?
Yeah, it was lovely. But I don't think it most probably wasn't as easy as this has been. And this has been a complete joy talking to you today. Oh, you're a natural.
It's lovely I mean, there's so many things. We could go on forever, but poor old Kobe will freeze to death. He's got his woolly hat on, he's all right. Anyway, thank you so much for chatting to me. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Thank you. It's like meeting a childhood. I'm one of your greatest fans. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you. Okay, hopefully see you in the castle.
Yeah.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Oh, gosh, I could have gone on chatting for hours and hours. So many questions. What an amazing story. What an amazing history. And don't forget Beaver Castle, the 12 Days of Christmas. Try and get there if you can. I bet it's absolutely wonderful. I'm certainly going to try, and I'm certainly going to go up and hopefully visit in the summer, because I've never been to Beaver Castle and it sounds amazing. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And what a lovely, lovely lady. Okay, bye. If this is your first time listening to Tea with Twiggy, please do remember to tell your friends. You can also subscribe for free on your podcast app and listen to all my previous guests. If you want to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Twiggy, or you can find me on Instagram at Twiggy Lawson. My thanks go to all the people that have helped this podcast happen. Many thanks to James Carroll and all the team at North Bank Talent Management. Thanks to all the team at Stripped Media, including Ben Williams, who edits the show, my producer Kobe Omanaka, and executive producers Tom Wally and Dave Corkery. The music you can hear now is my version of Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. If you'd like to hear the whole song, you can find it and all the other songs I've recorded on iTunes and Spotify. So check it out. I look forward to you joining me for my next episode. So see you then. Bye.
Just heard a Stripped Media production.